Welcome back to In the Moment. I am Lori Walsh. Lydia Bastianich is one of the most widely recognized chefs in America. She's an Emmy Award-winning television host. She's a best-selling cookbook author. She's the owner of four acclaimed New York City restaurants. Her new television special is called Lydia Celebrates America, Homegrown Heroes, and it premieres on SDPB TV this Friday, December 15th at 10 p.m. Central, 9 Mountain. It is a film that shares the personal stories of triumph, struggle, and resilience from American veterans who are making the transition from the military to farming. Lydia joins us now from New York City. Lydia Bastianich, thank you so much for being here.
Buongiorno, Lori. My pleasure.
Now, if you walk into our local bookstore, I will say that your face is all over the end caps in the cooking section with books. So you're a little bit of everywhere right now.
Oh, thank you. Well, there's a new book that just came out in October. It's all about celebrating. So Lydia celebrates like an Italian, and it does have my face on it. So I guess that's what you're seeing, Lori.
All right. So when people hear your voice, they can go see your face at their local bookseller here in South Dakota and make that connection. Tell me a little bit about your connection with veterans. Why is this such important work for you?
Well, Lori, you know, I'm all about food and communicating with food, and I'm in the food business since 1971. But I also am an immigrant. I came to the United States, I was 12. And I come from a part of Italy that is no longer Italy. It's Istria, it's a little peninsula, and now it is part of Croatia. But after World War II, Italy lost the war, and Istria was given to the newly formed communist Yugoslavia. That was the Paris Peace Treaty. The borders went down, and Istria became under the communism. And I was just born at that time. So, you know, we were ethnic Italians, and there was a great exodus of Italians back into Italy, into the world. But I was just being born at that time, actually, February 1947. And my parents, you know, where are they going to go? We stay there. We got caught behind the Iron Curtain. So my formative years, my 10 first years of my life, was under a communist regime. So no speaking Italian, no going to church. The freedoms were really kind of suffocated. And my parents then decided that this is no way. We need to escape somehow. So they wouldn't allow the whole family to go back to Italy because we had relatives on the other side of the border. And so my mother, my brother, and I, now as kids we didn't know that, we're going to go visit an aunt that was ill on the Italian side. My father had to remain as a hostage, and once we were in Italy, after 2 weeks, my father literally escaped the border. He was shot at. The dogs were running after him. He made it, and we all united in Italy now. What are we going to do in Italy? You know, we were kind of refugees. The time was really hard. And what they did to refugees, people that escaped, they put them in a refugee camp. So we were put in San Saba. Now San Saba in Trieste is a museum, but it was a camp. And we were in the San Saba camp for 2 years, awaiting our fate. Who would take us? Where would we go? We could have kind of reclaimed our Italian citizenship, but there was no jobs. So my parents decided, hopefully, we'll make it to America. The options were Australia, Canada, and America. And we did. In 1958, Dwight Eisenhower was the president. We were given the option to migrate and to come. We were given a visa to come to the United States. And in 1958, as 12 years old, I came to the United States. And, you know, for me, at that point, having the freedom that the United States offered, I think that's part of my success also, is that I was given this great opportunity, and I'm so thankful, and I can't get enough of it. And but I, you know, freedom is not free. I realize, you know, these young men, these veterans, as the years went by, you know, who is protecting our freedom? Who is keeping America democratic and free? It's these young men that dedicate their life, 2, 3, 4 years of their lives. Sometimes they dedicate even themselves, their whole life. They go there and they protect our freedom, wherever that might be in the world. And so I just said, you know, How can I thank them? How can I, you know? And this is my second special where I kind of enter into the lives of the veterans, of the young men that were, some came back, you know, with the PDS, minus few limbs, difficulties. But the connector is always the food for me. You know, I entered in food, cooking with them, eating with them. And this latest one was where I found that a whole group of veterans are coming back, and they're coming back to the land that they protected, and they reconnect with society in America through the land, through growing and feeding America again. And it is the most wonderful stories.
It's interesting that you mention food always being the connection. It seems to me that when you were in a refugee camp, the food must have been terrible. People, when they're in the military, the food is terrible. And so there's this celebratory sense of being on the other side of both those things and being able to eat really well and to eat together.
To actually have food, because in the camp, you're right, I was online. I had my own little plate. And the family was in line, the whole line. We would wait for them to give us, usually it was a little spaghetti, tomato sauce, a little piece of cheese. And then we would have these big tables, you know, not unlike the army, where you just sit down, you take your little kind of whatever you have, and you eat, you nourish yourself. So, yes, in my life, food was the lack of it, and now having it was a great part of how I grew up and my philosophy on food. And so, as you said, you know, the veterans had the same. What I found in talking to them is that when they were deployed and the holidays came around, that's the food, the smell, whether it was, you know, the smell of a pumpkin pie, even if it was packaged, even if it was in those little army packages, they just kind of, they would, with joy, because it reminded them of home. So food is a great connector.
Did you find themes of why some of these veterans are interested in farming? What's the connection between, you know, who they were in the service and who they are now as farmers?
Well, you know, in the service, yes, there are quite a few connections, and they resurface with every single one of them just about. And that is that in the service, you always work as a team. You are organized. You have duties, completion to do. And farming is a lot like that. It's not a solitary, you know, you just don't, it's not a solitary element. You have your team, you have projects, you have to get out there, you have to get them done. And the one big element that came through all of them is where on the front line you see a lot of destruction and a lot of death. Here in the field, when they planted a seed, they saw life emerge. Mm. They saw growing. They saw green. So they were part of positive, of growth, of life, of feeding people versus, you know, what they left behind.
There's one man who talks about that directly. He just says one of his favorite parts is just putting the seed into the earth by hand, because he's creating life after everything that he has seen. It's pretty powerful.
It's very powerful. You know, in those 10 formative years, my years, I worked alongside with Grandma. You know, with Grandma we lived, and she farmed, and she, all the food that we ate is what. And so, you know, I can connect with them, you know, when you see something growing and when ultimately you get the fruit from it. And, you know, this gift from the earth that comes out of, you know, a little effort of yours. What also was very, very, very moving was that farming offered for them a connection to the new veterans coming out. And they connected. You know, there's the Farmers Veterans Coalition where, you know, if you come out and that's where you want to go, they help you, they financially, direction-wise. And some of these farmers are in function of taking on their comrades that are coming back from the front line and telling them, this is the road, this is where you go. Because in the interviews, as the viewers will notice, all of them at some point hit a low point when they came back. There was kind of a big letdown. You know, they said, we were there, we had a big mission, and you felt so needy. So, and then you come home, And all of a sudden, you know, you don't have your buddies. You don't have your support. You don't have, you know, the regiment. And they felt kind of, they lose themselves. So in all of their stories, there's a moment where they're down, and then farming sort of offers them this opening to reenter society productively.
Tell me about some of the people that you met. And let's start with Edgar, is it Hercila?
Yes, Edgar Hercila. Yeah. He is of Mexican descent, and he was deployed in the front line, and he came back, and he took, in the middle of a town on South California, and where there used to be a car lot, he proceeded to develop a hydroponic farm. And here, just by, you know, and then now he is just doing aquaponic, you know, growing, raising fish in the same cycle. So, you know, it is progressive. It's not only the dirt, but where is food going in the future? So these veterans are very progressive and into the future. And, you know, they're entering these different opportunities in life with a mission. And, you know, that's always to create, to nurture, and to feed. So this is wonderful because he has the aquaponic vegetable salads, microgreens. And then he uses the same water. And aquaponic is where, you know, the plant itself kind of floats in the water, and the roots, there's nourishments and minerals of the water. The roots absorb it and makes the plant grow, and rather quickly. And, of course, it releases in the water some nitrogen or whatever, in which the fish, it's the food for the fish, and so on. It's a cycle, and the fish then, you know, the dirt from the fish generates again nurturing for the plants, and this kind of beautiful cycle. And you know, in the world that we're going into, and will there be enough food for everybody? These new techniques are very important.
And he's working very closely with another veteran, this Sergeant Looney.
Yes, he's working very, because, again, they always look, who can they help? You know, because they say, you know, when you're up on the front line, you're not by yourself. There's always somebody that's looking at your back, for your back, protecting you, and you're protecting somebody else. So a camaraderie and working together and giving each other opportunities is something that the veterans kind of just naturally feel good about. And so with Sergeant Loomis, I think he is given the chance to, he does only microgreens. He does basil, and we had the dinner at the winery, and we used all of their greens, and it was just wonderful.
And do any of these veterans come from a farming or agricultural background? Are some of them starting from scratch? How does it work?
Well, some of them are. So I went to the Appalachia region, and in the Appalachian region, there is, his name, Darling, John Darling. Okay. So John Darling is, his family are farmers 200 years ago, and they're orchard farmers. They have lots of fruits. And but he wanted, because his father was in the Marines, the grandfather, this commitment to their land and protecting their land goes through transgenerational with the Darling family. He went in, he registered, he did two deployments. He offered even for the second one. He volunteered, and he came back, and he developed evermore this apples and peaches, the orchards, expanded them, different versions. He, vegetables as well, he would do vegetables. But he expanded into producing applesauce. And he's even now distilling, making distillate from the fruit, from the apple, from the peaches. So what he is saying, and the funny thing, and it's in the show, at some point, you know, he heard people see, because that was the first trip out of Virginia that he did, and the discussion of distilling vegetables and fruits and so on. So he came back and he asked his uncle, he said, does this bucket of peach, will it give me more money in the bucket as peach or in the bottle as distillate? And they said, oh, as a distillate. And so now he's producing. You know, they're looking forward. These are young men, intelligent young men that had the experience that come back. So he had the roots, and he's continuing and evolving his family farm.
You had a few drinks of that. How did it taste?
You know, I come from a region of Italy. We're into grappa, you know. So it's not so different than grappa. And, you know, I enjoy my grappa because that's, you know, that's what we drank, especially in the wintertime where somebody came over. You offer them either wine if you had enough or otherwise grappa. So for me, it was good. It was, you know, it's intense. It has the aroma of the fruit. And it's, you know, a good byproduct, if you will, of the fruits beyond just turning them into jams, into sauces, and selling them as fresh.
What do you hope that the viewer will sort of experience from this television special? And if you're just tuning in, you can see it on December 15th on SDPB. It's called Lydia Celebrates America Homegrown Heroes. That airs at 10 p.m. Central, 9 Mountain. And for people who are tuning in, what are your hopes?
Well, you know, I really hope that everybody realizes ever more how important and precious our freedom is, how we need to safeguard it, and how these young men are the people that really are out there and protecting our freedom. They need our appreciation. They need recognition. They need our opportunity to pull them into our society as quickly and as much as we can. And from my side, it's just this great gratitude because, you know, I am free and I know what freedom means.
Mm. You talked about many of them having a real low point that they had to overcome. Do you recognize, did you have a low point in the refugee camps or when you first came to America that you had to sort of summon some courage to overcome, and how did you do it?
Absolutely. There's a, you know, at least mine was always the strength of the unity of the family until this day, you know, and that's important in any hurdle that we encounter is the family. So we were together, but in that camp, you know, big lofts where families had little cubicles and you heard everybody every night coughing, whatever, arguing, whatever they were doing in the morning. You know, you didn't know what tomorrow would bring, this uncertainty. And for me as a young child, you know, I would observe very much my mother and father. And, you know, when they tried so hard to cheer us up and to make sure, but they had their low moments. And for me, you know, I was kind of looking, are they feeling okay today? Are they, you know, as a child, your parents are so, so important. So there was this, what is tomorrow going to bring? Where are we going to be tomorrow? Are we going to have a house? You know, am I going to know anybody? Am I going to have friends? All of these things, you know, when you're 12 years old, that comes into mind, into play. And then, you know, it's even when you first come into a new country, when we first came here, we were brought here by the Catholic Relief Services because we didn't have anybody. So we were, you know, kind of a continuum of people helping us and getting us somewhere, getting us to a new life. But when you first come, you know, you don't speak the language. You know nobody. There's a lot of kind people around you. And, you know, they give you food. They give you a place to sleep. And, you know, you really feel this kind of, you know, am I ever going to be on my own? Are we ever going to have a home, especially as a child? You know, am I going to have friends? Am I going to go to school? I remember all of these things. And, you know, once we were settling within 1 year, you know, Liz, I can tell you that my brother and I, you know, the young ones, picked up the language and just inserted ourselves into American society. And the beauty of America's society is that as we entered, there were a lot of other Italians that we found here. And so that was kind of an entree into actually America. The fact that America is made of all of these different ethnic pockets of ethnicity, and we found our own. And, you know, when you find people that speak your language and come maybe from the same area, had the same experience, kind of it eases your entrance into this new life. But, you know, I can never stop being grateful or appreciating the opportunity that we were given. And if you give somebody an opportunity, I am the example of what one can do and can achieve and can continue to do. But with that has to come appreciation and acknowledgement and extending what was given to you to somebody else.
Lidia Bastianich, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
The new television special is called Lidia Celebrates America, Homegrown Heroes. It premieres on SDPB-TV this Friday, December 15th at 10 p.m. Central, 9 Mountain.